Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me as always is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
What's up, man?
Ah, we have the abbreviated intro and we do not have a guest, so I'll quickly say get well soon, Steve. But we're going to bounce around today. We're going to have some fun for the weekend pod. We have unrivaled action taking place this weekend, so we'll be recapping what we saw a little bit deeper from last week and also preview what we're going to see this week. Steve's going to yell at me about my recent power rankings. But before we get into the pod, a lot of NBA news to sort through as well. Quick announcement for us. If you would like to tune into Celtics Rockets on Monday, this upcoming Monday, 7:30 Eastern, Steve and I will be hosting a strategy stream via the NBA app. So you'll get our live analysis, get some breakdowns. We're going to have a good time. We're going to have some fan interaction, some polls sprinkled in. But we're going to be broadcasting that game via the NBA app. So if you have League Pass, tap in with us. If you don't have League Pass, you have the weekend to get that sorted. But I'm excited to do this once again. Steve and I earlier this year, back in November, we got to do Heat Pacers with Jordan Richard. I think that was the second game of their little mini series there. So our second game this season, Celtics Rockets, Boston home game. So tap in with us. Very excited for that one. Now, let's get into some news before we dig into Unrivaled in the mailbag and things of that nature. On the NBA side, the all-star starters were revealed. In the East, we have Jalen Brunson, Donovan Mitchell, Jason Tatum, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Karl Anthony Towns. Kenny Atkinson and an assistant from his staff will be coaching two of the all-star teams. And in the West, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Stephen Curry, Kevin Durant, LeBron James, Nikola Jokic, Mark Dagnall for OKC, and an assistant will be coaching the other two teams. Steve, any surprises among the starters or any of the ballot results that we got shortly after?
Well, I'm very intrigued to see your thoughts on the ballot results because I know they're always interesting. I think the Eastern Conference front court was probably a layup as far as what we thought would happen. It was interesting. Only Evan Mobley got respect from the media outside of it. No real surprises outside of that. What about you? Okay.
I think for me, not a big surprise. Like, as you've been saying throughout all these all-star returns, the East front court is just baked in. It's just going to be Tatum, Giannis, and Kat, especially with Embiid being out. Did appreciate someone in the media saying, hey, what about Evan Mobley? But ultimately, like, I wouldn't have argued, and I didn't when we did our first, you know, fake all-star teams. I didn't have Evan Mobley as a starter. So, like, cool that he got the shout out, but ultimately, I think the front court was fine. The back court was always going to be the toughest one. But I think with how Donovan Mitchell has played in his lower minute load, because Cleveland has just been blasting everybody, what Jalen Brunson has done pretty much all year long as a pick and roll creator, his chemistry with Kat, it's cool that the Knicks got two players that are deserving in this case. So no real beef on that front. I think in terms of the actual voting results, I guess seeing how close LaMelo was, I think he was what, first among the fans and for the guard vote, third among players. I didn't expect LaMelo to be third among the players. It did surprise me that the players had him rated a little higher than the media did, but I wasn't expecting third. I would have figured like Dame would have continued to get that respect, or Cade, who finished fifth among the guards, him and Darius Garland kind of tied there. So like, I guess I figured LaMelo would probably be like fifth or sixth on the high end among the players, and then it wouldn't have been as close, but the players having third just showcases how much respect they have for the shooting talent, the playmaking, the awkward finishes and floaters, but the insane touch. And, you know, we've talked about LaMelo on the pod before. Like, that is just 6'7" and elite shooting ability and pull-up ability. Like, that's not something you see every day. And he's had big fourth quarters this year. So, like, I get it. I just wasn't expecting that part of it. As far as something that I actually want to yell about, like, this isn't just for the East. Just in general, like, the player votes are always kind of funny for me. Like, you go through the full results, and here's an NBA player that has played like 8 minutes this season getting a vote from a player. And it's just like, why are we doing that? Like, if we're going to take it seriously, take it seriously. If we're not, then why even vote? You know what I mean? Like, why are like two-way contract players getting all-star votes from their fellow man when you know that they're not in their rotation, much less one of the top two guards, one of the top three front court players in the league? Like, this is something I should like seriously care about And obviously, I'm not going to lose actual sleep over it. But, like, just looking at that, just, like, it's the principle. And Steve's been yelling at me about that for years. But, like, dog, come on. Come on.
You don't believe in Trey Mann?
You know, I specifically am an enjoyer of Trey Mann, step back space creator. I'm not arguing that Trey Mann is a top two guard in the East. You know what I mean? Like, we don't have to do that. We don't have to do that. Like, I am fine with what's in all-star stuff anyway. I'm fine with players just abstaining from the vote if they don't want to do it. Like, we've had the conversation pretty much every year about how annoyed I get with just the all-star, how it's viewed as a concept. Like, is this important or is it not? Because of Hall of Fame resumes, contract incentives, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, like, I'm fine with the player just saying, hey, I don't actually want to do this. But if you are going to do it, like, take it seriously if you're going to do it. That's really my main point on that front. But that's it for me in the East. Did you have anything else? Anything else pop for you?
I thought it was interesting that the players gave the push to LaMelo, but also Cade and Darius Garland. And the media was very clear with the push for Cade and Darius Garland. Mm-hmm. And so the fallout was just Damian Lillard just getting split with Trae Young. It's interesting. LaMelo came real close. If the media had given him a couple more votes, maybe he would have nudged over the top. But overall, I think with what Mitchell and Brunson have done, no real qualms there. I think the front court was locked up. It was interesting that Evan Mobley was up there pretty high. Mm-hmm. And it was also interesting that Paolo Banchero was up there pretty high with the players.
The players love what Paolo brings to the table, and understandably so. My only bit with that is, like, Paolo's played, what, 11 games, 12 games, if that. So it is just kind of funny to see that in comparison to everyone else. But obviously, when he's on the court, he's an absolute tank. But that's all I had on the East. On the West, it's one of those, I understand it, and it's not a super huge deal, but it would have been cool for Wimby to get the all-star start. Like, when we did our fake all-star teams, I had Wimby as a front court starter. I think it was mostly games played things for Kevin Durant at the time that we did the exercise. And I think just what Wimby's done defensively and the growth he showcased offensively, I felt better about his season than LeBron's. It does not help that the Spurs just had this, like, 2 or 3 week stretch where they just could not win games. So I think, I guess the Paris game notwithstanding, because Wimby just went nuts in that game. But, like, broader strokes, the Spurs were just legitimately a play-in team, and they have fallen out of that. So that obviously doesn't help in a situation like this where you are battling with Kevin Durant, no doubt about it, Hall of Famer, and just legend in the circle, legend in player circles. LeBron James is who he is. You have to do everything you can to get that done, to get a spot over one or both of those guys. So Wimby's time has come. He's going to be an all-star. But, like, that was my one quick glance thing. Like, I think he's just been really freaking good this year. But not yet on that front. Anything stand out to you on the West vote?
Nikias, it's going to take more than that to knock LeBron James and Kevin Durant out of all-star starter position. I'm sorry. I'll be the old man in the room. Let's be honest. Number one, I said this was going to happen.
You did.
Jokic sure did. Was unanimous darn near for almost everyone, right?
Mm-hmm. First among the players, first among the fans, first among the media.
That creates a split. There's only two spots. Mm-hmm. So we know where the fans were at with KD and LeBron. And we know where the players were at with KD and LeBron. Mm-hmm. So that just meant the media had the push, had him second. It wasn't enough. But mm-hmm. you look at Anthony Davis and where he was at with the media. It was interesting. No media votes for Jalen Williams. But he got more of the player love. I need more people to respect DeMontis Sabonis, by the way.
Like, that one is where I'm just like, hey, what? I don't know what he has to do.
But yeah, genuinely. Wimby's on the rise, but KD had just enough to get over the top. It's a hard ballot to put together. Because are you going to leave LeBron off? I know you are.
That's what I say. As a starter, that's not me saying he shouldn't be an all-star at all. When we did the exercise, he was like the first reserve I named. But, like, yeah, I think just what they've done on the court this year, like, I would have Wimby. Like, I don't think that's an egregious take. But to your point, again, this LeBron is a culture on to himself. Like, complimentary, to be clear.
Nikias, he's 40.
He is.
Look at what he's doing at 40.
Yeah, it's incredible. Which is why he should be an all-star.
But not a starter.
I don't think he should start over Wimby. I could get to, like, I guess for me, and this is consistent with what I've said, like, I'm fine with LeBron over KD, especially because of the games played stuff. But, like, I would have had Wimby over both. So, like, best case would probably be, best case in this scenario would be, like, Jokic, Wimby, and LeBron getting in. But even when we did the exercise, I think I had it as the media did, where it was Jokic, Wimby, and Anthony Davis was third among the media votes.
We're gonna touch on this later. we'll circle back to how you feel about a certain player right here, but that is what it is.
But to your point about the weighted score, it was a 3.25 for Kevin Durant, 3.5 for Wimby. So if anything flips, one of the player rankings or the fan rankings, if that flips, Wimby's just in as the third guy. LeBron was more secure than KD was in this case. Beyond that, you already mentioned the Jalen Williams portion. Just seeing the fan vote for Andrew Wiggins and Draymond Green. That was interesting. Players still with a modicum of respect for Zion Williamson, despite him not really playing like that. Him and PJ Washington tied in player votes, though, which was funny. I think anything else standing out here, just the list of players that got media votes among the front court players. Şengün with 2, Jaren with 7. Domantas Sabonis with 4. You already mentioned no Jalen Williams with a media vote at the very least. So that part was interesting. I'm curious to see. We're going to get the reserve announcement, I think, next Thursday. Jalen Williams, Jaren Jackson Jr., Alperen Şengün, Domantas Sabonis. Considering what the guard room still is in the West, like, I don't know if all four of those guys get in. In a literal sense, they can. They can just take up three. Well, even then, like, we haven't mentioned Victor Wembanyama, Anthony Davis yet. So, no, that just gets tough. You have one front court spot and then 2 wild cards. So at best, that is 3 spots for those guys.
It's going to get tight. Well, I think depends on what the backcourt is. And that's where I think it gets interesting. Like, because Luka's out, does Luka get recognized with the hope of a replacement? I think Anthony Edwards is in as a guard. Mm-hmm. Is it Kyrie? Is it Ja? Is it James Harden? Then you start to think about it. Let's say it's Anthony Edwards and Ja, right? Let's say James gets a wild card spot.
Yikes.
You got maybe 2 spots. So in my head, I'm thinking it's going to be Wimby, AD. I think Sabonis gets in. And I think Jaren gets in. Houston may be mad at me, but I think that's where we're headed.
And we will get to find out next week. So I'm excited to see what that's going to look like. In other All-Star news, I already mentioned the coaches on both sides. Andre Jackson Jr. from Milwaukee, Matias Buzelis from Chicago, Stephon Castle from San Antonio have all committed to doing the dunk contest this year. So I think we need at least one more. Excited to see. How do you feel about the young field so far?
I don't have an issue with it. How do you feel about the youthful nature?
No shot you stuck that in. I'm cool. Like, especially with Stephon and Andre. I know they have Matas Buzelis has some really fun posters on his film, just going back beyond his NBA time. So, like, I'm curious to see what kind of creative stuff they comes out with. Who are they going to try to jump over? Are we going to get, like, the toss off side of the backboard type stuff? But, like, in terms of athleticism and player type here, like, I think there's high upside. I am curious of what the fan reaction or fan response or fan care level is going to be, considering, like, none of the three are, like, high-level star names, even among the young players. But there's a lot of athleticism here. So I'm intrigued to see what they come up with. I'm mostly fine with it. And I guess we are still waiting on three-point contest news or official three-point contest news. Like, there are rumblings of, like, a 2v2 competition including the W, but we will wait on official word on that front. In other news, we did have a trade between the Phoenix Suns and the Utah Jazz. The Jazz receiving Phoenix's 2031 first-round pick. Phoenix turning that first into 3 firsts from Utah. They're going to get a 25 first round pick. It's the least favorable of Cleveland's pick and Minnesota's pick. A 27 first, which is the least favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, and Utah's pick. And a 29 first, the least favorable of Cleveland, Minnesota, and Utah's pick. A quick little 1-for-3 for Phoenix. Which, early thought, let's get some more picks in the room so we can either speed things up on the Jimmy Butler front, or we have a little bit more flexibility to do other stuff. This is still quite the risk to trade a first that far out, especially because we just don't know how long this era of Suns basketball is going to last with KD and Booker and Beal for now. But obviously, if they get Jimmy Butler in the door, Beal will be elsewhere in that case. So, like, rebuilding heading into 2031, or just trying to retool, make sure you're still competitive out there. It's just a long way out, so we'll see. But interesting gambit, though. Like, this isn't the first time that we've seen Phoenix get creative with picks or pick-related trades since Matt Ishbia has taken over. So this one certainly caught the eye. Did you have any initial thoughts on the news?
I felt like they kind of had to do it. Like, when you think about it, Nikias, you came on here and you said, hey, I don't know what the Suns have pick-wise now, right? Mm-hmm. And they said, we'll fix that immediately. We'll take this one and turn into three. And now we can do something. So, makes sense. Do you enjoy the idea? Do you like the gamble from Phoenix here?
The thing I don't like about it is that obviously you're not literally forced to do any move, but like the fact that they're so strapped in terms of their pick situation that this was kind of the only avenue they had is where it gets problematic. And so for their sake, I hope they are able to land something or some things. But this year, moving forward, they actually round out this roster in a real way. Because this was kind of the move. And even with them getting three first, again, it's the least favorable in all three first round picks. Cleveland's involved, Minnesota's involved. If Minnesota blows up over the next year and a half because of their salary situation, et cetera, then you're just looking at Cleveland, they've just been the best team in the East. Their core is young. Obviously, injuries can happen on any given year, but if you're just talking about the bet over the next, 4 years across the next 4 years, I think Cleveland's just going to be good. So I don't know how good those picks are actually going to be.
That's fair.
So we will see what they come up with, though. And then just quickly on the injury front, Brandon Miller, having wrist surgery, he is out for the season. Ends his year, averaging 21 points per game, about 48% on twos, 36% on threes. Took darn near 11 per game this year. 5 boards, 3.6 assists, 1.1 steals, 0.7 blocks. Derek Lively with a fracture in his foot, out at least, the initial report from Shams Charania was 2 to 3 months. Have also seen a report that they're going to reevaluate after 4 weeks. So obviously, you want Derek Lively to get healthy as soon as possible. So maybe this is just a month, month and a half type beat. And we're looking at like a post All-Star break or early March return. On the low end, this is getting into the start of the playoffs. And so we will see where Dallas ends up as the Western Conference, as you've alluded to many times, Steve, is a bit of a buzzsaw in terms of the standings and how closely teams are grouped together, particularly in that like 5-9 range. Dante DiVincenzo with a toe injury. He is out indefinitely for Minnesota, recently inserted into the starting lineup as Minnesota's been trying to find some things on both ends of the floor. That is a big hit for Minnesota. And Jimmy Butler apparently missed a flight and has been suspended again for 2 more games. I'm just ready for this to be over with, I think is my only real commentary on the Butler stuff at this point. Like, I don't even care to get into, because we've already did it to where I understand Jimmy's side, I understand where the Heat coming from. So, like, I don't even care to get into the who's most at fault part at this point. I would like for Jimmy Butler to end up in Phoenix. He has made it incredibly clear that he does not want to land in Memphis, that's just something. Like, I would just assume that is just, we've talked back channels. Memphis doesn't want to give him a max or don't want to give him, like, a 3-year commitment this offseason, so he's ruling them out. But it is just funny to kind of get the repeated reminder, I don't want to be in Miami and not Memphis. Anything else, that's fine. But beyond that, get the Jimmy trade done within reason. Let Miami season be whatever it's going to be, whether they gel together and they make a push, or they're just missing a legit all-star forward and they can't get it together. Either way, like, this cloud is just a lot.
So are you boycotting the Miami Heat season until this gets done?
I'm not boycotting the season, as we just talked about Bam and Khalil Ware on the last pod. But, like, I'm just kind of over, like, the saga at the very least. Again, this isn't pro-Miami or pro-Jimmy. It's just that suspensions and leaks and no Memphis and we got a band together. Hey, here's a cool win. Oh, no, they've been blown out again. I just want a deal to be done for everyone's sake. Let's see, engage Jimmy. Let's see whatever version this Heat team is. Like, I just want both sides to move forward. It stinks that this is where it's at. Again, we did the whole Jimmy Butler conversation, so I don't have to do like 15 minutes on it. I just want it to be done. Just want it to be done.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Hey, listen, this is just, it's just nonsense. Anyway, on the W side, from a piece coming out from the Associated Press, Brittany Griner, currently playing in Unrivaled. We'll get to some Unrivaled talk shortly. Taking some free agency meetings in earnest, it would appear. So this may be the first time that Brittany Griner seriously considers leaving the Phoenix Mercury. And we also got some rumblings via an article on Sports 360 AZ from Jet Metcalf, who's been covering Phoenix area sports for a very long time. The expectation is that Diana Taurasi is going to announce her retirement. Now, that isn't from Diana herself, so not set in stone. There is also, because she is a maniacal competitor, complimentary, a very funny bit would just be getting the Tom Brady thing to where the news is leaked, and then she's just like, oh yeah, watch this, and plays out of spite and averages another 16 or 17 points per game. So that possibility is still there, but at least that is still notable that someone that plugged into that area is like, the expectation is that Diana Taurasi is going to retire. And if she does, maybe that does open up legit movement for Brittany Griner. And if so, she's going to have options. She's not the superstar version of herself anymore, but that is still one of, if not the most dominant post threat that the W has. That's just a level of size that teams can't really deal with. And if now she's in a situation to where she is, you know, option three, option four somewhere, or you can just manage the minutes in the regular season because of what else is around her. If that is Minnesota, if that's Vegas in particular, like, I'm intrigued. If for another reason, then because I just head to the offseason, like, this is just going to be another one-year deal. Brittany's never leaving Phoenix. Now that I actually have to think about spots, I'm just like, huh, what does she prioritize in this case?
All right, are you ready for Brittany Griner to be a Las Vegas Ace?
I've been trying to think a little bit more about it. It's one of those, the talent play is very obvious, to where like that is just taking a lot of pressure off of Asia Wilson as like a primary scoring option on the post in particular. As we've talked about a lot on the pod, the Aces have worked to move her around the chessboard over the last couple of years. But that gets incredibly tough for opposing defenses. Asia's a monster in and of herself, and now you are just dealing with Brittany Griner. You kind of have to put your five on Brittany Griner, and Asia is just so good at punishing mismatches. That just gets incredibly tough. And I think recently did a quick free agency piece. Over the last 3 years, Aces, two championships, et cetera, the Aces have lost the minutes in which Asia has been off the floor. And this is with them having this all W talent, these Olympians, et cetera, et cetera. The fact that they've still managed to lose the Asia minutes across this 3 year sample kind of speaks to how important she still is. If some of those non-Asia minutes are now one or two of the all W guards, whoever's left, and Brittany Griner as a post scorer, like, that certainly makes those minutes feel better. At least I would think so. So I understand the fit. I think the thing that I would keep an eye on would just be the Brittany Griner defense. How many coverages can she execute? Especially as the Aces ended up finishing in the top half of defensive rating last year, but they just were not themselves on that end. And so depending on what the rest of the roster looks like, just how much scheme versatility can they tap into when BG's out there? But that's still an incredible talent play. And if you can get that done and also add around the roster, like, I don't think the Aces are just going to turn that down.
All right. So I have another question.
Okay.
If you're the Aces, is it Bree Jones or Brittany Griner? What's a better fit?
Like, I would want Bree Jones. I think. Younger, also, even going back to the Connecticut days, like, we have seen Bree Jones as an all-star, as a starter, and also as a reserve. And I think if you were just trying to sell the conversation, I think it's a little bit easier to tell Bree Jones, we would still like for you to come off the bench, but we may close with you, et cetera, versus BG, who, again, isn't the peak version of herself, but has always been a starter. And maybe that isn't something that she'd be willing to do. I don't know. I haven't, you know, this isn't sourced information. But I feel like it'd be an easier conversation on the Bree Jones front, especially if it's just going to be a one-year thing.
Understood.
All right, Landry Jones. And also just the rebounding of it all. Like, the Aces are not a team that crashed the offensive glass quite a bit. Bree Jones can just kind of be a one-woman wrecking crew on that end. I think the Aces could find that middle ground of, we don't compromise our principles, but we also get extra chances because we have Bree. And again, like, I think she's someone that could play alongside Asia in those second units where Asia isn't there. You can just feed Bree Jones on the block, especially if she fully returns to form another year out from injury. So I would take the gamble on Bree Jones if I could. But man, Fiji in a different uniform, man. I don't know what to do with that. If that ends up happening, because this could just still end up with, okay, I took these meetings, this is enticing, I actually still just want to finish my career here. And that's just it. But didn't have this Portia Domingo card for sure. You've mentioned, well, at least I've mentioned Vegas in Minnesota. Are there any other landing spots that you could see Brittany Griner with if she does leave Phoenix?
The Dallas Wings.
Ah, did play at Baylor. So that connection certainly there. Kurt Miller over there, he certainly loves his bigs. I feel like this would have to be a Tierra or Kalani. I'm afraid I have some bad news. At least one of y'all got to go somewhere else if we're going to pull this off. But okay, I can see Dallas. That's probably it, really. Like, I don't think Brittany Griner wants to spearhead like Golden State. I'm sure if she's taking calls, they're absolutely going to hit her up. New franchise, we're going to spend a whole bunch of money, these awesome training facilities, et cetera, et cetera. I don't know if that's enticing to her, but maybe, you know, I don't know. But yeah, I would imagine Vegas, Minnesota, Dallas are probably the three if she does leave Phoenix. Like, I don't think, again, that's just a lot for that to be New York if we're just looking at other obvious contenders. How do you feel about Atlanta? Like, they just had Tina Charles, and she was good.
I don't know. But
I don't think Cheyenne Parker Tice is going to be back.
I'm not sure about that one, guys.
Okay. All right, figured I'll float that one out there.
I think I understand the fit. I don't know if it fits. Timeline-wise.
Okay. Understood. Okay. Figured I'll toss that one out there. Some more nuggets on the W front from Annie Constable of the Chicago Sun-Times. The Sky have met with Courtney Vandersloot, certainly in the market for a point guard. I think we've already talked a little bit about the Kendi Carter situation. When we last recorded, we were recording on Monday, so like it would have been the deadline to give the qualifying offer to her to make her a restricted free agent. The Sky did not do that, so Kendi Carter is indeed slated to be an unrestricted free agent this offseason, so that is a level of intrigue. But Sky meeting with Courtney Vandersloot, also in the report from Annie, there were talks between the Chicago Sky and the Seattle Storm for Jewel Lloyd, who has requested a trade, but those talks have cooled per Annie, and Jewel Lloyd reportedly wants to land in Las Vegas.
I once again ask you, Nikias, are you ready for Jewel Lloyd to be traded for Kelsey Plum? I just want to ask the question.
I think a similar answer. I'm still piecing through it. You know what I mean? I guess for me, it's less the actual on-court fit between the two and more how much smoke the Kelsey Plum is going to be traded thing has gotten over the last like 2.5-3 weeks. I've expected some sort of shutdown, rebuttal, et cetera. Like, as you mentioned on the pod, like Kelsey just had her jersey retired at Washington. A bunch of Aces put together a congratulations video that was played on the Jumbotron there. Like, obviously there's still a level of camaraderie and chemistry there. I don't know. I mean, haven't heard from Kelsey directly, but it's still just kind of surprising that she may want the new start, at least this year. I can understand next year. Everything kicks in. Let me cash out.
et cetera, et cetera. Like, it just feels weird that this might actually be it. Like, it's when there's this amount of smoke, it's kind of hard to believe that it's nothing to it. So I guess it's more of that for me than Jewel versus Kelsey. Like, we talked a little bit about that. Like, Jewel's still very good in a situation like this where she's number three. I think she can obviously slot in, but I don't know. That's just interesting to me. And then from Kareem Copeland of the Washington Post, Shatori Walker-Kimbrough, not expected to return to the Mystics this season. He reported that there's been some contract talk between the two, but they weren't able to reach anything. Obviously, that doesn't mean that something can't be reached at a later date. And contracts can officially be signed, I think, February 1st. So there's obviously time. But with the expectation that she may be gone, any Shatori Walker-Kimbrough fits that come to mind for you?
Well, I think with her versatility, she could help a whole bunch of teams. Mm-hmm. So wherever she ends up at, I wouldn't be surprised, and I would think it's a solid move. My mind goes, is this something the Lynx would want to add to their team? Mm-hmm. Is this something the Sparks would want to add? The Dream, maybe? That's mm-hmm. kind of where my head goes.
The Dream were the first team that I thought about here, as they've just been kind of cycling through backup guards and just guard depth in general because of injuries and things. Shatori, one, coming off a career high scoring season, primarily in a bench role for Washington last year, 7.5 points, 2 assists, a steal off the bench. Very good defender. Certainly perked up the aggression. There were just multiple. Shatori has scored the last 8 for Washington. She scored 13 in the first half for Washington, et cetera. More open style for the Mystics last year. But her showcasing this amount of aggression as a scorer really intrigues me. And I'm curious to see like how much of that carries over to her new spot. So Atlanta was the first team that came to mind for me. I think Chicago, if they do strike out on Courtney Vandersloot, they're not able to add a high-level guard. Like, I think she could just fit into, I play defense, I'll make the right plays, I can also pick my spots as a scorer to kind of help fill some of the Kennedy Carter void that's going to be out, that's going to be there with, I mean, what, Kennedy averaged 17.5 last year? I don't think Shatori's going to average that, but like, she can at least be a part of filling that scoring void with Chicago. So I think that would make sense for me. I don't know what the Aces are going to do with their guard room in general. Like, obviously there's the Kelsey Jewel of it all, but as we've been talking about on the pod, like, who is the actual backup point guard on the roster? Because on the depth chart, like, it is just Chelsea goes to the bench, like, Jackie gets to do it, Kelsey gets to do it, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of, like, the non-star guards on the roster, like, Shatori would obviously fit, but how many minutes would actually be available for her? Does she want that? I don't know. But, like, that would be a fit for sure. Especially if Tiffany Hayes ends up going elsewhere, they would certainly need to fill that gap as a secondary creator there. So that would make some sense. The Sparks, always room to add to the guard room, in my opinion. Add some defense to that room would certainly be helpful. Really echo your sentiment. She fits anywhere and play on or off the ball. That's part of the value of her. But I think Atlanta probably comes first for me on that front.
I mean, could be another six player of the year campaign. Where did she finish last year?
She finished third in six woman of the year.
Ahead of who?
Do we want to do this today? We can. Because as I was getting stuff together for my notes and for the doc, et cetera, I was reminded that Marina Mabry received multiple sixth woman of the year votes, finished fourth in sixth player of the year voting, which I will say up front, this is not an argument that Marina was bad off the bench or anything of the sort. The problem is that as I don't have an official vote, but as someone that has seen the official ballot and also like how those are submitted, which is a separate pod for a separate day, you are literally instructed on the sixth woman portion that you must vote for a player who has primarily come off the bench that season. Marina Mabry played 40 games last season.
And this is she where we started, have fun.
Marina Mabry played 40 games last season. She started in 27 of them. She quite literally was not eligible for this award. And two voters still gave her votes based on, admittedly, her very good play off the bench for Connecticut. But Connecticut is not the only team that she played for.
But it's the only team I'm submitting. Marina Mabry as a Connecticut Sun, not Marina Mabry as a total player.
That's and not how that's...
Like, how many games did Marina Mabry play for the Connecticut Sun?
She played 16 and she came off the bench for 13.
That sounds eligible to me, my friend.
No. Like, here's the thing, Steve. You could pull... Like, I would still personally disagree with you for obvious reasons, but you could pull that card if the disclaimer literally was not at the top of the ballot.
And what
if it's that, not, if it's not in wording...
What does that disclaimer say?
Steve... Player must have appeared, essentially, you got to have appeared in more games as a reserve than as a starter. And she did not do that.
Did Marina Mabry, as a Connecticut Sun, do that?
As a Connecticut Sun, yes. So and if the Sun were the if the Sun.
Marina Mabry as a Connecticut Sun. Sounds like it to me.
No. If the Connecticut Sun were the only team that she played for, absolutely. That is an easy ratio there. 13 starts to three, 13 starts. 13 reserved appearances to 3 starts.
Yeah.
That's an easy case to make. That's cool. However, as she, that was not the only team she played for. No.
Yeah, but I'm not.
Just flat out no.
I'm not submitting Marina Mabry as Chicago Sky. Can't do that. I am submitting Marina Mabry as Connecticut Sun. And I am well within my rights.
This is completely unserious.
I've just
said. Which is why there was, I immediately yelled about it. Multiple voters posted about it. Just that's not, it's just not, again, if it wasn't literally in writing, I would yell at you for using 16 games, or I guess 13 games in this case, we're just isolating for the bench games. I would yell about that, but like you would in a literal sense be able to just pull that off. The disclaimer is there. Like I can't say what I want to say, but like you can't do that.
I just did. What do you mean? Just laid it out there for you. Yeah. I'll pivot real quick because I've got you justifiably fired up and I did my job. You're welcome, Dunkers. Are we underrating the Courtney Vandersloot? Hey, I'm out. Because there was a quote that she had where it was like, hey, I would like to go somewhere where I can have the ball in my hands and make the plays I think I can. And I was like, I understand it, because she kind of got sucked into the Liberty Vortex to a degree. Mm-hmm. Not because she was not a great player, but more so for us to win, you kind of are going to have to do X, Y, and Z, because we got to beat that team in Las Vegas. And mm-hmm. so I think a lot of what Courtney Vandersloot does got lost in the sauce to a degree. Mm-hmm. And it's funny because I was thinking about it once I read that quote. You, Nikias Duncan, went from, is Courtney Vandersloot going to close derogatory last year or 2 years ago? To is Courtney Vandersloot going to close positive last year? And I felt like that summed up her run. And I understand her being like, well, I got the ring.
Yeah.
Can I go back to being me, please? Like, mm-hmm. this was great, but can I, like, I would like to not do this anymore. Mm-hmm. Like, there's the, like, we kind of like look at the Kelsey Plum noise to a degree that doesn't exist, but it's like, hey, what's going on here? Yeah. We got the Jewel Lloyd noise that doesn't, well, it exists.
It absolutely exists.
It exists. And also, Sloot's just like, hey, guys.
So I'm like one of the best point guards in W history.
Can we do something with that, please? Thank you. Mm-hmm.
So on that note, hang with Sloot for a little bit. Is it just Minnesota?
Does that take the ball out of Courtney Williams' hands?
It probably does a little bit, but like, I might be okay with that in some spurts. Cause I think some of my like hesitation last, particularly like heading into the finals, is like they were just going to need a lot from Courtney Williams as a decision maker, because she was just the creator in the guard room. Obviously, Kayla McBride can score, but like Courtney's, you know, as Cheryl Reeve talked about, like, we want you to be a point guard here. And like, she was very good last season for Minnesota, but she even spoke about some of the growing pains of like doing that full time or continuing to do that full time, because she assumed more of that role in her, you know, with Chicago before she got to Minnesota. And so I think a situation to where Courtney doing, you know, handling that kind of role is more of a bonus than a necessity. if Snoop can set things up, get the ball more in her hands, you get Courtney a little bit more off ball. Obviously, she's going to set up Fee a lot more, who, again, we're going to unrivaled talk next, but good gracious, Fee's been incredible. But, like, you get that chemistry going, et cetera, and now you can blend into Courtney lead second unit, or if we just want to bench Snoop for whatever defense is guarding a certain way or whatever case may be, now you still just have that versus in order for us to reach our ceiling, Courtney Williams has to do this. Like, I think I would be cool with that kind of trade-off. And I think if you're just looking at contenders, like Snoop's not starting in Vegas. Snoop may start in Connecticut, but I'm not sure if they're going to be a contender after this offseason. AT's been cored, but like, if there's any kind of noise there with her or DeWanna going elsewhere, then that would obviously change some things. So I think in terms of potential contender with starting spot available, like she's not starting it. Yeah. Among that, like, I think it is just Minnesota or Connecticut, and Connecticut with an asterisk. So we'll see if their stars actually stay. And frankly, even if they do, are the Sun going, you know, Sun with new coach, et cetera, are they still going to be in the class with the Liberty, the Aces, the Lynx? Or I guess in a literal sense, the Liberty, the Lynx, and the Aces. So it feels like Minnesota to me. Obviously makes sense for Chicago to get in the room, and I think she would be good for them. And I think she could probably maximize the I want the ball in my hands of it all in Chicago. But if that isn't going to happen, it feels like Minnesota to me. Like, I think the Sparks, it would behoove them to call. I would imagine Snoop wants the mix of I want the ball in my hands and I want a legitimate chance to win. So I just don't think the Sparks are there, at least not yet. I do not believe Dallas is going to be in the hunt for this, as they're going to have Arike, and I'm assuming it's going to be Paige by the time the season starts. So I think that's where I land with Snoop. But to your point, like, I think it is a more interesting free agency situation than Morris are given the credit for. She is still good. And the fact that she can play make the way that she can, and something we've talked about quite a bit on the pod, just her usage as a screener and her willingness to do that. Like, I don't think many point guards are willing to do that at the volume and the efficiency that she does. So like, she would just flit into a lot of different places. So good stuff on Courtney Vandersloot. And now heading into a little bit more unrivaled talk. We gave our early thoughts on the month. Well, I guess technically the Tuesday pod. So you can check that on YouTube if you'd like. More of a general question for you, Steve, to kind of kick things off, as I think we were both just generally excited for the league forming and what it means for these women, these athletes, getting the equity, getting the exposure, et cetera, to getting the money, being able to train stateside, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of like actually evaluating the play of the league, like, what were some of your expectations heading in, or how were you coming in terms of the viewing experience? And has that shifted at all based on the opening weekend?
I think for me, I was just happy it exists, and I was happy to see the players in a competitive environment where they are clearly working to get better. And I think it's easy to judge the on-court product or go up and down with wins and losses, but it is their off-season. And I think to see how hard they went at it on both ends of the floor was probably my goal. And it's a reminder, oh yeah, this league is pretty stacked. And so you're looking and seeing different players playing in different scenarios and showcasing different skills. And obviously different teams are doing different things. But for me, it was more just like, okay, what's the one-on-one contain look like? What's the push look like? What's the cutting look like? What's the quick decisions look like? How are you using the space that you have? Are you getting a catch at the elbow? Are you driving from the perimeter? Are you able to kind of understand where the gaps are if there's a pick and roll or a handoff? Like, that's kind of like the little stuff. But it's more like enjoying the process and kind of tracking to see what improves as it goes along, more so than being critical, if that makes sense to me.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if that's where it has to go, because you got to remember, 3-on-3 is hard. Like, 3-on-3 is not an easy thing to deal, especially, like, I know it's not a full court, but you're going up and down 3-on-3. There's a lot of space on the court. You're going to have to get baskets in a different way, and you're going to have to guard in a different way. No, two-man actions, pick and roll, handoffs can become deadly. Pass and cut can become deadly depending on the scenario. A miss can be a push, and now we're looking at a whole different scenario. An early post-up can look different. Like, there's just a lot to it. So for me, in my head, I was like, you know, 3-on-3 was always a good way to practice what things that I've done, or defensively understand, okay, let's see how hard I can work to make this as tough as possible. Because there's certain things, I don't have certain elements. Like, I don't have two extra defenders. I don't have the luxury of space being tightened up naturally. Like, you're on an island for a second, and you got to be able to deal with that for a heartbeat and then get in a position where, okay, let me help if I can. So that's more where I was at with it. I don't necessarily think I was looking for anything in specific. It's just been fun to kind of watch it.
Okay, understood. Like, I think for me, again, echo your sentiments. I'm glad this exists. And as Fee has talked about, as Stewie has talked about, Unrivaled is not, you know, a league geared towards replacing anything. It is, we want to give y'all more options. If you still want to go overseas, you can. But ultimately, we want you to have the option to stay here, train, get all the amenities that you need, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm glad that this exists. And I expect this to build moving forward. In terms of the actual evaluation, like, I, heading into the league anyway, I was trying to figure out how seriously to take it in terms of evaluation, if that makes sense. Because as you said, this is still their offseason. Like, they are working on stuff, and they're also working towards getting to their peak selves ahead of preseason play, or ahead of training camp for the W, and then preseason play, and then the actual regular season that is expanding to 44 games this year. And so for me, it's just like, how much of this do I bake in terms of what I'm looking for? Because I am looking to see, all right, what are you working on? Like, it has been cool, as we get into some of the takeaways shortly, like, it's been cool, like, Tiffany Hayes is pretty much running point for the Laces when she comes in. Dejanay Carrington for the Mist, like, they've had lineups where Sloot and Jewel Lloyd on the bench, and it's just Dejanay, actually, we need you to initiate now. Kate Martin's had the ball in her hands a little bit more. We have seen the workout videos, and now we have seen in both of the games for Angel Reese working on, like, that sidestep mid-range pull-up, and she's knocked it down. So it's like, okay, it's cool to see his application. When I do see something that needs some work, whether that's defense in space or, like, processing speed with some of these on-ball reps, you know, using Azel as an example in the first game, I think I ended up tweeting out, you know, her first, like, 3 or 4 attempts inside the arc. Like, the release point on these doesn't seem much higher than what we saw. Like, trying to parse through, like, okay, how much grace am I giving for that? As this is super early, this is like opening weekend of Unrivaled, but bigger picture, the season starts in May. Like, training camp is probably early May or, like, late April. Like, there's so much time for things to get better. And, like, just trying to figure out, like, how am I calibrating that part of it?
I guess I would ask, why are you calibrating it any differently? You have the luxury and ability to see these things that you wouldn't normally be able to see.
Yeah.
So why are we now using that as a negative against players?
I think that's a fair question. Like, I think just through a general evaluation lens / I want to see this player get to / become the best version of themselves. Like, you just want to see the positive signs. And as we are now seeing more, It gives you another data point into, like, where they're at.
Yeah, but why are we using that data point as concrete?
I guess to your point, like, I don't think it should be concrete, but it is something else to consider. And so for me, like, when I made the tweet about Angel, we'll use that as the example. That isn't me saying, oh, she's never going to get it as a finisher. It's just, oh, okay. So, like, this is still being worked on, and that's cool.
What if that's just her finishing point? So do we now cloud ourselves with, boy, that the release is there, as opposed to the drive's a little bit stronger, kind of a little bit more of a straight line, hitting first a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Where do we draw the line?
I think, you know, for us and for you, like, and just in general, like, we should do all of that. It should be, hey, I noticed this, but I also noticed these drives. I also know these sidesteps. I also noticed the slides when she's switching out, et cetera, et cetera. Like, I don't think anyone should over-index on, this is the bad thing I want them to get better at. It didn't get better. Nothing else matters. I don't think that's fair. I don't think that's smart or good analysis. That just should not be the case. So, like, for me, again, that is just something else that I am catching on film. With her heading into Unrivaled, okay, how tight is the handle? with some of these drives? Is she hitting first, to your point? What does the finishing look like? And like within the finishing, what types of finishes is she going to? How is she dealing with contact? How is she dealing with contest? What is the release point on some of these finishes? And ultimately, is the ball going in? To answer your question, if her release point is her release point, if she gets better at it, I don't care. Frankly. Now, I can only speak for myself on that front. But like part of me looking at the release point is because of the results that she got last year. It felt tougher for her with where she was releasing the ball, and teams got the challenge, the shot a little bit easier. If she's able to like wield off with her off form a little bit better, or when she does hit first, she's creating more separation so that it doesn't bother the release point. Okay, cool. She's a better finisher. That's all I want. Like, it doesn't have to be that, but that is just something that I've saw, just as an example. If does that make sense?
Sure does, bud.
Okay. Fair enough. But yeah, so like it's been cool to get more of these data points. Like again, this is just off-season work that we generally don't get to see outside of their trainers have posted something or they're working in the team facility. We get like random clips there. The fact that we get to see game reps is super cool. And to your point, I don't think anyone should take that for granted.
But again, I just think you're making a mistake if you look about it that way. I'm not saying you can't be critical if that's the way you want to go about it. I'm not an opinion changer. I would just like you to think for a second. And the fact that this exists is beautiful. And I think you got to realize it's not easy. It's only going to get harder as they get more used to the format. They get more used to the teams. They get more used to each other. When you watch Unrivaled and you see actions, look at the denials that are happening. Look how many times someone runs through a handoff opportunity or a screen or slides under. Look how hard it is if you make contact on one of these dribble handoffs on the right side, the whole left side is clear. Mm-hmm. So if you get dinged, that curl is a layup. So you've got to find a way to contain. And for a lot of players, it's working on finishing. Like, I think it's interesting. We watch Unrivaled. We see some of the matchups. It's interesting. Okay, how's this person going to contain? How's it going to work? I talk about people being exposed all the time. Okay, it's one thing to drive by someone at 3-on-3. You got to finish, though. Mm-hmm. So what's that look like? Drive, hit contact, finish. Are you improving there? Like, I think that's part of the fun that we should look at as this builds out, because we're going into week 2, right? Mm-hmm. What looks different now? Everyone's played. Everyone knows what to expect. We know the pace. We know the tempo. How does that change things? Mm-hmm. That's what I'm intrigued to see. So, I mean, like, if you want to talk about, like, what's the most important thing, or what should some players look for, or what should we look for, look at the decision-making, look at the quick decisions, check about the drives, think about where players are catching when they're guarded by different people, you know? For, let's say, like, a Rakia Jackson, for example, the amount of different people that are going to be thrown at her is going to be interesting, because she's going to play against different teams, different lineups. Might be a bigger person, might be a guard. Okay. Are you getting a catch at the elbow? Are you able to fight for your spot? Once you get it, are you driving? Is that a hit first drive, or are you setting up for your shot? Look at Kate Martin, right? Mm-hmm. Boy, I'm going to keep cutting. And then when I get a handoff, I'm going to drive downhill. Not every drive may be successful, but the mindset behind it is, okay, let me go get in the paint. Mm-hmm. Those are important reps. So I think that's probably what I would emphasize to people. If you're looking to see what's important, take advantage of the reps. You know, there's a lot of bucket getters who are looking to get buckets in a variety of ways. A lot of side steps, a lot of step backs, a lot of pull-ups. Those are important too. Just keep an open mind.
That's true. That's true. And like, I was going to flow into a mailbag question from our guy, Steven, who's asking about what we think the most translatable skills are that can be developed in Unrivaled. And you pretty much answered that, kind of the quick decisions, the drives, what kind of shots you're getting to. If you want to dig deeper on that specific question, you can, but it does feel like you pretty much hit the notes on that.
What do you think about it?
Like, I think for me, it's I think it's processing speed for me. Like, I think back to opening game, things the Mist and the Owls. Dejanay Carrington was on the bench, but she was getting a sideline interview. And she was talking about Well, she was essentially asked, like, what is something that she's working on or what defense is doing that have made her work a little bit. And she said, I'm pretty much working on my decision-making. Like, I'm running points sometimes and trying to figure out, like, when to go, what I'm reading, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, Tiffany Hayes, as they had media availability on Thursday, she talked about going to her coach and saying, hey, I know I need to be more of a point guard with this group. I want that responsibility. Like, this is my natural position, but I want to take that on. And she talked about how different it is, like remembering the play calls, remember where people need to be, getting into things at a timely matter, like when to call my own number, when to hit someone else, et cetera. Like, I think general processing speed and decision-making is probably a bigger thing. There is more space with the 3-on-3 format, as you've mentioned, two fewer defenders on the floor, not worried about as much help. And so when you catch the ball, how quickly are you driving? When you drive, how quickly are you getting into whatever you feel is the preferred move? Are we getting into a Euro step? Am I just trying to use my shoulder to carve out a little bit more space? Am I driving baseline? Am I going reverse? Am I going inside hand? Am I trying to set up a dump off pass? Like, how quickly am I doing that? How well am I doing that? Like, with Dejanay in general, like, I feel like she has made her decision quickly. How she executes said decision has been more of the growth area for her, which is fine. It's opening weekend. She's talked about this not being her natural role. And so I'm excited to see how that grows. But, like, you will see her drive, or you have seen her drive over the opening weekend, get downhill. She's trying to do a lay down pass, and the ball's going, like, 90 miles per hour. She's firing it in there. It's like, okay, you made the right decision. You made the right read. Okay, this is the type of pass you need in this spot, or this is the velocity on the pass you need in this spot. Those are important reps for her. And I think if you can nail it in 3-on-3, it makes it a little bit easier, or it should make it a little bit easier for you to at least see it once you get back to the W side. You're used to attacking quick and knowing what to read. So I would probably look at that as the translatable stuff. I think with some of the jumpers or some of the self-created looks, like, help is going to make those opportunities a little different.
Ooh, let's stay there.
Okay.
Let's stay there for a little bit, Nikias. Okay. When you say help is going to make that a little bit different, what do you mean? Because if I'm about to try and get a bucket, I'm just going to go try and get a bucket.
I think that's just a nod to, like, the general restriction of space.
Now, restriction of space, but I'm not going that far. Low clock scenario, 6 on the clock, I got the ball. I was an unrivaled, and I had space. Now I'm just going to go with the quick 1-2 jab crossover pull-up. Mm. Is that not translatable? Because I'm not going to where the help is. I'm going to get a bucket.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Oh, I'm cooking. He ain't like that one, y'all.
No, like, I think that is a fair rebuttal. Like, if you can get to some of those 1 or 2 dribble packages and you're comfortable taking those shots, that certainly helps. I guess, like, more of the, we get into 3, 4, 5 dribbles or some of the side steps. Like, do you feel less comfortable getting to those as you are catching the ball with someone that's kind of parted in the nail or someone's creeping over, et cetera? Like, how often you're getting to specific shots? Like, I would imagine that changes as you're adding the extra defenders and things like that.
I think it goes underrated, right?
I'm gonna go with a couple random points.
Okay.
Here, so let's consider this. Let's think about this, right? Number one, there are some players that are now taking shots that are a little bit different than they have ordinarily, right? Mm-hmm. Let's look at Dejanay Carrington, for example. Improved, right? We all agree on that.
Yes.
How many times has Dejanay gotten a ball off a flare and took a three?
It does feel like a lot.
She's doing that in Unrivaled. Mm-hmm. How important is that? Does that now change how you can use her in movement as you get reps coming off footwork, those type beats? Mm-hmm. For some of these players, they don't switch a lot with their teams, but they switch a lot here.
Yes.
How important is that to be able to understand the context, the when, the why? Because it's very interesting, and the laces or just taking any sort of screen or handoff and saying, hey, you're not going to have a good time because of who we have. Like, hey, that's Alyssa Thomas rolling, and now guess what? That's Stephanie Dolson rolling. So understanding the timing of when to help, how to help, how to fight over, when to recover, when to late switch. Like, there are little micro things that you can translate to the big club. And I think that has to be the overall goal. Let me get better. Let's compete. But this is going to make me a better basketball player at the end of the day. Mm. You know, like look at how Tip Hayes looks in Unrivaled. whatever play you need to be made, I will make. And then if I don't make that play, I'm going to drive into your chest. Mm. How much fun are you going to have?
Not a lot. Tell you what. Not a good bit. I was quickly looking. I wanted to nerd out and get the actual Dejounte off the flare number. I think it's 6 from last season. As I go through like the actual film, at least that's what they have in the second spectrum database. Because like there are some possessions where she comes off a flare, but like she gets the ball later in the possession, and that counts. But that's not what you're speaking to. So like doing the hand track, a little bit of the hand track on that front. Like I think it is legit like 5 or 6 that she's taken off, that she took off a flare last year in the database. So those reps, getting the footwork right, it's going to be important. The defense part that you hit on, I think, is going to be the big thing. Because this is a guard your yard situation. Like, I think that's going to be, that should translate at the very least. If you do well with this amount of space, when you have helpers behind you, you should feel even better. And for the bigs in this environment that have had to execute more late switches than they're probably used to, or just switching outright, hey, if you can navigate this with no help behind you, you probably feel a little bit better and more comfortable, more empowered to do so when you have the extra 2 defenders back in 5-on-5 setting.
Like, I just like micro skills, you know? Closeouts got to be better. They have to be. If closeouts are bad here, it's a little bit different.
It's a bucket.
And you're going to have to work to recover. I think, like, even something as small as, oh, you went under. There's a shot here. Mm-hmm. I should take this shot. Like, that's the kind of stuff you got to kind of try and wrap your head around. I know it's nerdy, maybe not as fun as being messy, but if you want to get the most out of this experience as a viewer, that's the stuff you want to see. Wide pin downs. Are you setting your player up? Are you coming off clean? Are you getting a catch? Can you get a curl? What are you getting out of that? Can you use the space to your advantage? Like, those are the kind of things that are going to last to a degree. Because all these actions are going to happen very quick. So we're going to talk about tempo, the pace, up and down. It's not like they're just taking shots. There are screens, there are handoffs, there are cuts. What are you doing with it, though? Mm-hmm. What are you doing with that one-on-one attack when you have a mismatch in transition? It blends together. And so if you start to stack it, you will have more fun watching Unrivaled.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff. And again, like, this was open week, as you alluded to. Like, we now know what to expect. Multiple coaches during media availability on Thursday spoke to, yeah, we kind of know what to expect now. They know that these are some non-negotiables for us. Like, we have to be able to, you know, contain the ball. Almost doesn't matter what coverage we're in if we can't contain the ball initially. We got to make good decisions. We turn it over. It's kind of tough trying to get back in transition in this format. Stuff like that. Got to move the ball quickly, et cetera, et cetera. So as they get more comfortable, as they get in better shape, again, this is the offseason for them. Not that anyone looked like they were in like outright bad shape, but like as you're playing more basketball, naturally it's just going to get better moving forward. And so like, what does that do for the defense for that matter? I can make more second or third efforts in a possession in week 4 of Unrivaled than I could in week 1. Like, that should just be a natural progression of the league and playing more, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm excited to see what this weekend's about to look like. Should be very neat.
You know what I'm excited for? Your updated power rankings, because, buddy, what is happening here, friend?
Ah, yes. What's going on? Said so on the last podcast, but for Bleacher Report, I am going to be dropping weekly power rankings for Unrivaled. Article last week was the preseason ranking. Like, hey, this is what I think about these teams, et cetera, heading in. Now we got a couple games under the belt, and we had quite a bit of movement. Steve, are you ready for the rankings?
Yeah, man, I'm ready to hear how you went from talking about the Phantom being the number one team on Rival because they could do everything to hearing how you put them 6th and likely probably flipped where you had the Lunar Owls.
Well, I'm afraid I have some good or bad news, depending on your perception. Coming in at number 6 for me is indeed the Phantom, who went 0-2 in opening week, dealing with the Marina Mabry injury.
Now again, I want everyone to know Nekias Duncan in the preseason power rankings said about the Phantom featuring Natasha Cloud, Brittany Griner, Sabrina, Marina Mabry, and Katie Lou Samuelson and Satu Sabali. The fun of this roster is they can earnestly do whatever is asked of them. We know what kind of interior presence Griner is, but she's one heck of a passer. Inverting the pop four will be possible. And that has fallen into, hey, when you lose two games by 53 points, there isn't much to smile about.
I mean, is there?
It's obviously early, but I'm interested in seeing what kind of balance the Phantom strike with their lineups. This is after saying the fun of this roster is they can earnestly do whatever is asked of them. And now I'm not sure what they can do.
I want to see how they adjust. You know what I mean? Especially with, again, Marina just did not play. That wasn't on the bingo card when that article was written. And Sabrina not expected to play this weekend, as she's attending to other business, as we saw if we watched the that Spurs game. But either way, so you're down two players. You end up getting Natisha Heidemann in. She played in the second one, and Adam Harrington raved about Natisha Heidemann throughout the entirety of media availability and what she meant as a driver, someone to get downhill, the defensive intensity that she brought, the ball pressure, the screen navigation. And so, but anyway, just to kind of zoom back out, I did move the Phantom to six. They have a chance to move back up. No big deal. But you lose like that in the defense, which was much better in the second game than the first. It was kind of tough. Like, they got diced up in game one. They started bigger, and then they started smaller in the second game. And so that's where the lineup, that's where the balance question comes in for me. Like, where are you going to land? You can do everything. Like, when healthy, this roster is still very talented and versatile. But, like, what do you lean on? What is going to be your base?
Honestly, I think the Marina thing was a bigger deal than people expected, mainly because this team is kind of constructed to have score X and score X. So now we can kind of blend things up to a different degree. And that's no disrespect to anyone who's on the team, but you kind of see it visually. Okay. Satu has to do X, Y, and Z. If Satu does not have X, Y, and Z because she's facing Alyssa Thomas, who's very upset to play at Satu Sabli during this game, well, all right, Sabrina's got to do X, Y, and Z. Well, not sure how Sabrina's hand's working, but she's going to shoot, and maybe she's not. All right, well, if that's not happening, then the Katie Lou thing doesn't work as well as it should. And then if we throw it in the post to BG, then it doesn't, and she's not scoring, then it doesn't work as well as it should. And then Natasha Cloud can't be the agent of chaos as much as, you know what I mean? Yeah, there's a subset of things that kind of need to happen. So I'm intrigued to see if week two looks a bit better for them. Who do you have at number five, buddy?
At number five, I had the Mist.
As wow. They also went 0-2. You have completely flipped your entire power rankings from the preseason, because I remind you folks, guess who number two was for Nekias Duncan? You guessed it. The Mist, featuring Dejounte Carrington, Aaliyah Edwards, Rekia Jackson, Jewel Lloyd, Breanna Stewart, and Courtney Vandersloot.
This is true. I mean, this is the fun part of like how the games fleshed out last week, to where you just have three teams that went 2-0 and the other three went 0-2. So naturally the 0-2 teams just are on the bottom of those standings this week as the sample grows, et cetera, gets moving. But had them five this week. I did appreciate early on in that Lunar Owls game, just kind of watching the defense. And it was something that popped for me with the little bit of, I wish I could remember which Twitter account it was, but they were just posting like preseason stuff because they were there for opening weekend. But they were just posting like random like scrimmage stuff or whatever for them. And one of the things that stood out early for me was there's like a two clip sequence to where I think they were scrimmaging the Rose or the Roses, I want to say. And it's like wide action for Kalia Copper. She comes off the wide pin. And Dejounte's tasked with fighting over Breanna Stewart. She drops back a little bit. It's not an automatic switch. I was like, oh, okay. So they're really going to trust the navigation that they have. They have size and length on the back end. It's going to be more traditional coverage for them. Like, I'm intrigued by that. Not sure if it's going to be good or bad with this foreign format. But like, okay, I'm intrigued by that. And then on the other end, there's another clip where it is, I want to say it was Dejounte bringing the ball up the floor, but it is Jewel Lloyd screening for Stewie off ball, forces a switch. It is now Stewie attacking / posting up Chelsea Gray and getting the basket. And I was like, one, well, that looks familiar. I know Chelsea Gray's just tired of defending Stewie at this point. But two, okay, this is some of the inversion they can get into. This is some of the mismatch hunting they can get into. And even with the two losses, you got to see the elements of Stewie receiving a screen from Jewel Lloyd, or, you know, elbow catch for someone, and then Jewel Lloyd setting the back screen for Stewie. or Courtney Vandersloot setting the back screen for Stewie. You got to see those elements. You talked a little bit about Rekia Jackson. She is just a walking mismatch. And at any given point that she's defended by someone smaller, good luck. Again, that opening game, that third quarter where she just lost her mind to close it out was just, hey, you're Alicia Gray. You're very good. I'm also taller than you. Here's a drive and here's some jumpers as well. You don't know what I'm going to do. And so even in a weekend where they went 0-2, you got to see they can still just poke at you in ways that make you very uncomfortable as a defense. I would say just very quickly, we talked about DeJounay, so I'm not going to hang here too long. Just I'm keeping an eye on what those on-ball reps are going to look like, what kind of lineup versatility they tap into or continue to tap into. And there's so much low-hanging fruit with Stewie because she just missed a lot of shots that she normally makes in the first two games. If that turns, they just feel so much better. And they likely just win. They just start winning games if that flips. So
I mean, don't forget, they were in control of the first game they played until...
Yeah, like that was a comeback win for...
Smith performed the ultimate reverse card Uno style. Said, actually, I would like to win this game.
Yeah, Jewel Lloyd with 30, and Skylar's like, no, actually. Yeah. I got something for that. Here's some Chicago action for you, bud. Yeah. But yeah, it's... So yeah, not super worried about them as they have their full complement of players. Got to make shots.
Okay. I mean, who do you have as number four? It couldn't be your team that was number three last week, could it?
No. We have Rose BC. They're at four.
So they stay at four?
They stay at four. A couple of close losses. They fought.
The Kalia Copper, Chelsea Gray, Lexi Hole, Angel Reese, Azure Stevens, Brittany Sykes.
Grouping. Indeed. Which, couple of things just on the lineup slash minute front. One, we just haven't really seen Lexi, which I wonder if that shapes, if that changes this weekend.
Friend of the show, Lexi. Shout out to Lexi Hole. She had some really good defensive moments. Now, you're going to yell at me because I can't remember which game it was, but I remember like, hey, Lexi's guarding her tail off. And then she came out the game immediately. And I was like, oh, well, there's that. I think, is that more so because of the roster construction? Like, if you have Chelsea Gray and Cod, that's a lot of minutes in theory. And then if you have... Yeah, that gets tricky. That gets tricky, you know what I mean? Like, there's just not a... I think it'll improve. I think it's more just like one of the combinations. Who do you play Lexi with more than anything else?
Yeah, because I think it's one of those, like, you kind of need Lexi in with... Like, I think ideal bench line would probably be like Brittany Sykes, Lexi, and Azra. Like, you just go just the full bench lineup. But at least going through the first couple of games, and particularly the first one, like, Azra in space defensively wasn't super great. And I think it was the first game where Lexi had the really good defensive possessions. But she turned down shots. And once they got into the pocket where, hey, we need buckets, naturally you're like, hey, let's just get Cobb back in. Or let's just shift more of this usage elsewhere. And so I guess we'll see if she has like a... Just for the comparison, like if it's a Kate Martin turn for her moving forward to where like, okay, I got the ball, I have an under, or I have space, like I'm just not thinking about it. I'm actually just shooting and being aggressive. Like if that switch flips a little bit more, I would imagine that may garner a little bit more trust in terms of the minutes. Because I think the defense is just going to be there. And like obviously the cutting and the general off-ball feel is going to be there. But I think as you take Ka out, like you do just need more scoring. And so I think there's room for her to take a little bit more onus. And like maybe that's where you get more of the trust on that front.
I think it's just really tempting to play Chelsea Gray and Ka a lot. I understand it. And so, I the fun part about that team in particular, it's been fun watching the Angel Reese growth. I think the adventurous post-ups, the work, I think there's more value in being able to work with Lisa Leslie and also just have Chelsea Gray be like, hey, roll.
Here's the ball.
Cut. Yeah. Like, it's right there for you if you'd like. Like, there's way more value in that than, like, the finishing point. Like, she's going to learn a ton from this experience. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really good for it. And we've seen some of the payoffs, some of the sidestep midi, some of the drives and finishes. Like, that's been really fun to see. And then defensively, hey, you want to do a little bit of switching? You want to switch a little bit? Can you keep this in front real quick?
That's been fun to kind of see. So I think you just got to kind of, that's like Angel's one of those players where you got to understand the overall landscape of what we're trying to do here. Yeah. And kind of build on that as opposed to wanting everything to be in one piece at one day. I think
she's 22.
I think that Ka's drives are going to be important for this team. Chelsea Gray's passing is going to be key for this team. I kind of want to see what it looks like with Sykes and Hull playing at a different level. Like, I think Azrae was stronger than people really anticipated in this environment. Mm-hmm. So it's a fun team.
It is a fun team indeed. And I think to your switching point with Angel, and like just in general, them trying to find more of the defense, that's where the foul trouble in the first game really hurt, or rather the second game. Because that was the other thing that kind of popped me lineup-wise in that second game, where they pretty much, they close against Fee of all people, but they close with Chelsea, Ka, and Brittany Sykes. I'm just like, huh. This is clearly the we need buckets to come back lineup. But that also just kind of poses some issues defensively from a size perspective. So again, just keeping a line of, an eye on lineup balance. Like, that's a lot of it for me, just because, hey, we finally have two games in the books, but it is only two games. It's a very small sample, so still looking for answers on that front. Number three for me, as we get into the 2-0 teams, we rock with the Vinyl, who were third in last week's power rankings. 79-73 win over Rose BC, and then a 15-point win over Phantom BC, that second game where the Phantom were better, but ultimately weren't able to get it done. Very fun stretch of games for De'Erica Hamby, where you saw some of the highest post usage, I will float to a handoff on either side. I'll be used as a screener. The slips are just going to be there. And she has always been someone very good at slipping screens and finding those pockets in a three-on-three environment. Oh, boy. Good luck dealing with that speed. But more than that, though, when she did get mismatches underneath the basket, things like her first two or three attempts in that first game, it's like, ooh, I really wish we get a little bit more from De'Erica as a finisher. But she found it immediately after that. And that carried over into the second game as well. So, like, her just doing a better job against mismatches really popped for me. Other note, I wanted to hit before I toss it to you. Shout out to, I guess, two quick ones. Ryan Howard's incredible, first and foremost. Beyond that, the Arike defense has popped through two games. That has to sustain.
It took you 3 years to finally compliment Arike Ogunbowale's defense, despite her.
No, that's not true.
This is a historic moment. Dunkers.
That's not true. I'm not about to let you get that off.
Listening on your couch, listening in the gym, wherever you're listening, this is a groundbreaking moment, folks. We finally did it. Stuck in has finally complimented Arike's defense, and we can all go home now. We might as well hit the horns. I know we have more teams to go through, but I wouldn't blame you if you paused in this moment and got yourself a treat, because we've never seen or heard this before.
This is incredibly nasty. One, this is not the first time that I've complimented Arike's defense. But two, the issue is that when we, in particular, have conversations about Arike defense, it's never, hey, Nikias, how have you felt about it? Where I can say it feels better in this area, et cetera, et cetera. It is, hey, Nikias, Arike all defense? And then I have to say no. And then that paints me in the negativity corner. No, like, there's a middle ground here. I'm not letting you get that off. Absolutely not.
You don't have to say no.
I do. If I believe the answer is no.
See, don't get mad at me.
Anyway, how have you felt about Vinyl BC?
I think that they're a team that understands who they are and they believe. And like the way that they continue to flow, especially when you have Hamby and Ryan Howard and Arike out there, and you don't know, okay, who's getting the handoff? Okay, who's getting the next handoff? Oh, wait, what's that last screen? Oh, wait, why is De'Erica Hamby open?
Wide open.
Or when they come down and it's like, it's just a little bit of like, okay, everyone's running at the same time. Is Arike about to drive? Is Ryan Howard about to drive? Oh, that's De'Erica Hamby as a trailer. She drove. This is unfortunate. Mm-hmm. So I think they kind of have like a nice mix of actions, but also we're going to just like run as fast as we can and hit you in the face and also curl. Ray Burrell has been a revelation to me. Mm-hmm. Not that she couldn't do it, but like, hey, the defensive juice, I'm getting in your shirt and we're going to have a good time. The cutting has popped to me. I'm like, hey, wait a minute now. So that's where it's like, okay, you're getting the most out of this environment. You are here to get better, and that is a good thing. But I just think overall,
they've got such a good blend that when they get stops, it's hard because you don't know what D'Eriq is going to do. She can dribble handoff with either one of those two guards. Now they can attack and score in different ways. Like, I think they're figuring it out. Mm-hmm. That's a team to keep an eye on.
I like it. I like it. I appreciate the Ray Burrell shout out. I want to see a little bit more of Leah, just in terms of the minutes and also the usage. But I think that'll come, obviously. Therese Witherspoon, a really big fan of Leah Boston. But no, this has been a fun, versatile group. And as you mentioned, you don't know who's driving. You don't know who's coming off handoffs. Like, just that general unpredictability and just the ball skill they have up and down the roster makes for a really tough guard. Number two, also went 2-0. We have the Lunar Owls, the team that I had.
I've been waiting for this moment, ladies and gentlemen. Now, if you're not aware, last week, Nikias had the Lunar Owls ranked at 6th. And he said, disclaimer, I love this roster. And frankly, I'd rank them higher if they weren't the only team with 5 active players. Now, a week later, he has put them all the way up at the top. This is your early warning. They may fly up the rankings in the next article. You should have stood on business to start, buddy. You sat on business. You should have stood on it.
I sat on business is crazy. We have the title of the pod, so that's cool. But no, and that also gives you a window into like when it was written, et cetera. Because as I said in that disclaimer, they're the only team with 5. And then we later got the Marina Mabry news. So like even that was only true for like a day and a half. Only that was true for a time when I, you know, submitted the article, et cetera. But yeah, like I love what they had on the roster and pretty much all of that popped in their opening stretch of games. Like what popped for me was the defense. Like, hey, so y'all are going to be the team that kind of leads into these full court pickups and full court pressure, et cetera. Huh? This is neat. I figured somebody would do it. I didn't know if it was going to be you. That part's cool. But then from there, man, between, you know, we talked about this on Monday, released on Tuesday, but like them spamming Chicago for Skylar and them just getting like 6 different things out of it was a lot of fun for me. But the Skylar drives, Alicia Gray has just been hitting people on drives and her defense has been incredible through the first 2 games of Unrivaled. So she's mixed in the drives. The defense has been there. She's also knocked down some timely threes. Shout out to her quote tweet of there was a fan on Twitter that did like a player ranking for Unrivaled with one of those rank them lists. And Alicia's category was stop shooting threes. Alicia quote tweets it was like, well, darn. Did not say darn, but I was like, okay, we love the good sport. And I was like, one, that's funny. 2, you talk about her threes when she just like locked up Stewie in that first game. And then the second game was also very good on defense. And she just made clutch play after clutch. Like, this isn't fair to Alicia Gray. But either way, the defense has popped for me. Fee has just been incredible. Leading scorer in Unrivaled so far. 27-11 in game 1. And then she had 25 in the first half of game 2. In route 2, I think a 31-point performance in that one. She's been everywhere. Mid-post, she got it. 3, she got it. Drive, she got it. Off-ball actions to generate a mismatch. She's cooking. There's just no answer for Nafisa Collier.
I think Fee has enjoyed the space in particular, especially when she is bringing the ball up. And yeah, you see that dribble handoff over there? I could do that. What if I just cross you over and then finish?
Ooh-wee. She has been incredible. And so heading into the weekend, where we get the Owls and the Phantom on Saturday, I get some Fee versus Satu. Might get some Fee versus BG, depending on who they decide to start, et cetera. Like, I'm curious to see how they're going to attempt to guard her, but no. Lunar Owls has been incredible. And so they deserve to move up. They did move up. Courtney Williams has been diming all over the place with the second unit. We talked a little bit about the point guard thing in relation to Courtney Vandersloot maybe being a Lynx option. But Courtney Williams has come in. Oh, that's an under. I'm pulling up. Oh, wait. This is 3-on-3. This is just space. I can just get to this pull up whenever I want to. You overplay it. Hey, there's a pass. I don't mind making it. The other thing I'd note just on the pick and roll front for them, like where they're setting some of these screens have been very fun for me, especially with Courtney Williams. There's been a lot of inside the arc stuff. And so if it is a switch, hey, that little bit of a gap is just a slip underneath or a wraparound, and now I'm just at the basket. They have also, this is something I want to pay more attention to this weekend, so I don't want to say this definitively, but it does feel like the Lunar Owls have been intentional about whoever that third player is.
not necessarily spaced in the corner, but more so on the wing with some of these pick and rolls. Again, that's something I want to pay more attention to say that more definitively on the next pod, if it's true or not. But like, you're combining the low pick and roll with, even if you want to send help, this help is a little bit higher. And so now these underneath passes are just kind of here. Like, the Rose have also done that with Chelsea Gray and Angel Reese, some of their pick and rolls as well. But,
well, I think the one thing with the Lunar Owl is you got to look at the relocations as well. Mm-hmm. So not only are they on the wing, but it's also, hey, I will come to the top if you have made a decision, so to make an easier outlet. So it's interesting. It's a, some people think spacing can't be compact, but sometimes you got to make a decision, make the defense bend to that, and then make it easier for yourself to capitalize on it.
There we go. There we go. And at number one.
Come on. Come on, guys. Give it to me. Give it to me.
At number one. They were fifth in the rankings for me last week because I had some questions about some of the shot creation outside, you know, some of the on ball.
It's because you don't respect. It's because you don't respect Big Mama.
Oh, darn it, no. But number one, coached by Andrew Wade, friends, the laces. Forget belt, just lace to either way. The laces 2-0. A couple of blowouts. I will not repeat the score of the Phantom game. Then they beat the Mist by 20 as well. And it has been, it's just been a little bit of everyone. Alyssa Thomas as a hub. Not just Alyssa Thomas as a hub. Set up some splits. It's, let's get into some screening action over here. Flowing to another screen for Alyssa Thomas. And now we get into the split up top. And you have to make multiple decisions on this possession. And here's another cut, here's another layup, etc. Caleb McBride really set the tone in that first game, shooting, just knocking down all of the threes. Stephanie Dolson with a couple of early threes in that first game in particular. But we talked about Kate Martin, her cutting, and also the aggression that she's shown with the ball in her hands. Tiffany Hayes, again, more of a primary initiator with this group, especially as they have not had Jackie Young yet. Andrew Wade was asked about Jackie Young's status yesterday, well, excuse me, on Thursday, to where he said, you know, she is ramping up, was not a definitive she's going to play. So still not sure of the status as of recording, but at least she is closer than she was last week. They haven't had Jackie Young yet, and they just diced up the Phantom in the Mist to that degree. So they kind of have to be one when they just have the biggest wins, biggest winning margin over the weekend. They're that efficient. It was, hey, listen, they were a buzzsaw.
The laces are very fun to watch. I'm very intrigued to see how the league treats them in week two, but boy, did they take a leap. You're talking about a team with Stephanie Dolson, Alyssa Thomas, Kayla McBride, Kate Martin, Tiffany Hayes. Let me tell you, this is an engine as far as movement goes. You want to see handoffs? You want to see screens from the elbow to the wing? You want to see continuous flow in 3-on-3? You want to see beautiful possessions? This is your team. Try to tell people about them. As soon as I saw the team, they tried to change the team on me. They got some dogs, man. They're going to compete on the defensive end. Then offensively, they're going to push. They're going to run. And you don't know what's going to happen. Look at Kate Martin. Hey, pull up three. What's up with you? Mm-hmm. Hey, Stephanie Dolson. Oh, are you smaller than me? I would like to go the paint as soon as possible. Oh, I don't have anything. Swing. The ball moves. The actions continue on. Like, that's the flow from them has been probably been the most fun. Like, we talk about pace. We talk about tempo. This is the team that executes probably to the best of their ability because they're versatile. Versatile. Jesus. Kayla McBride has been really aggressive in multiple ways. Tiff Hayes has been really good at driving and setting the table. That just allows kind of this like holistic vibe of our bigs are hubs. We can go pick and pop. Stephanie Dolson pops. Alyssa Thomas can roll at any time that she would like. Mm-hmm. Would you like to switch? Probably not. And now, if you watch, roll, finish, roll, finish, roll, finish, roll, help, shot, it just becomes an onslaught.
Isn't that? That was going to be the other thing that I mentioned on the Alyssa Thomas front, because the hub work speaks for itself. She's been very good defensively. She's just brought it as a scorer, and she's just been mashing folks on the block. Like, you get a smaller defender, like, just good luck. It is just a shoulder with an asterisk into your chest, and it is now just a basket. And even against like-sized players, she's winning on some of these post touches. And I'm just like, hey, if Alyssa Thomas is just a legit scoring option in a 3-on-3 setting, this just changes the ceiling of the group. Because Tiffany Hayes can just win on drives all the time. Kayla McBride can be moved around the chessboard and can get her own buckets inside the yard. They, again, they have not had Jackie Young yet, which is who she may just be their best, if not their best offensive player, at least their best scorer when healthy. You mentioned the inside-out threat of Stephanie Dolson. Kate Martin being more aggressive, you know what kind of off-ball feel that she provides as well. This is a really balanced group. It would appear that having this much 3x3 experience on the roster and this kind of collective unselfishness, and you mentioned the dog mentality, as I was chuckling about that, thinking about it the other day, I was like, huh, there was just a big trade with this roster before the Sabrina announcement. And then they came out against the Phantom and said, nah. Absolutely not. But no.
Yeah, they said have fun with that.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised you let their defense, because it's like, oh, okay. You let run pick and roll. That's Alyssa Thomas switching. And it's Kayla McBride also switching on whoever you think your big is. And so we're fine. Mm-hmm. We're just fine. I also love how just high on the floor they start some of their actions. Mm-hmm. So you get a wide pin down. It's a catch near half court. Oh, now it's a pass to Alyssa Thomas with a really high split with a lot of space to work with. That's not very fun to guard in 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. Lately, they don't let you let down. So I'm interested to see if the league is like, hey, you know what? Can you guys not do that anymore?
That's good stuff. It just very quickly, another reason why I enjoy the Laces, more of an off-court. More of an off-court reason. But, like, Andrew Wade will just, like, he will just say the stuff in terms of the basketball thing. During media availability yesterday, there was an on-court question for him. And then he just, like, absent-minded complimentary. I'm just struggling to think of a different way to phrase it right now. But, like, he just went into, sometimes we want to get into this, and then we want to get into this here, and what the defense is doing here. Just very tactical stuff. And like Tiffany Hayes literally taps him on the leg, like, hey, not too much. And he kind of dials it back and gets into actual coach speak. And I was like, yeah, this is just a guy that just loves basketball, just loves talking about basketball. Like, I just enjoy that as a hoop nerd. So those are always fun, kind of get the insight from all the coaches. But he'll just spill the beans on some X's and O's stuff. And I enjoy that as a hashtag media. So shout out to that kind of insight. But again, the Laces just carved up people. 33 assists through their first two games. That leads all unrivaled teams. So that is your spiel. Steve, how would you grade my power rank? Is that just an F because of the flip at 6-5? Or what we got?
I wouldn't give you an F. That seems very rude. And I'm a little offended that you think that of me. I do find it very funny that you do not believe in the Laces. And the reasoning for why you didn't believe in the Laces, was Kate Martin's on-ball growth. Please respect Stephanie Dolson and Alyssa Thomas and Kayla McBride. Thank you. Let's see. Very funny that you just flipped the Phantom in the Mist at the bottom. You're going to have a rough time if they turn around.
Hey, listen. Making tough decisions. That's fine. I want to see it, and then I'll adjust. Like, I don't,
Also, very, very sneakily kept the vinyl and the rose where they were at. It's a very smart power ranking move as far as someone having to do this every week of the year.
That's crazy.
Very steady, very smart. I see what you're doing. Who plays this weekend, the guys?
This weekend on Friday, or a little bit later today, depending on when you hear this, the Phantom and the Mist, followed by the Laces and the Vinyl. Should be fun. And then on Saturday, we have the Mist and the Rose, and we have the Lunar Owls taking on the Phantom.
Okay, so Phantom Mist, winner gets 5. All right. See what you did there, buddy.
That's crazy. Hey, gotta have stakes, you know what I mean?
You asked for an unrivaled breakdown. The people asked for it. We brought it.
That we did.
Do you have any free throws?
Do not have free throws. Do you have free throws?
You didn't bring any free throws to the Thursday pod?
See, unfortunately, I had all these notes and also mailbag things that, as we are an hour to 30 plus into the pod, we are going to move the mailbag to a later date. Yeah, but man, some really good questions. Hey,
send those questions in the DunkerSpot at, where's that?
DunkerSpot@yahoo.com. That is DunkerSpot@yahoo.com. You should, because I've given it to you multiple times.
iCloud reset. But yeah, DunkerSpot@yahoo.com. Go ahead and send those questions in. We'll get a mega mailbag at some point. Sorry my voice didn't work at the All-Star segment, but hey, we're working through it.
Hopefully, we appreciate you putting
hopefully it we're sitting with the vibes. Let's see. If there's one change that you could make to more unrivaled or one thing you could add, what would you add, Nikias?
Ooh. The bit would be like, hey, add second spectrum tracking cameras. Okay. So you can see what these handouts going.
That's enough. That's enough. hit the horns. Richie, just hit the horns. That's whatever crazy. He says afterwards, he doesn't just hit the horns. I'm to turn my mic off. This man said, give me more stats for 3-on-3 basketball. This man, I'm turning the camera off. You ain't going to see me. That's not what I'm doing. God. You can finish the show however you want to. But I asked you, what do you want to add to this wonderful, beautiful league? And this man said, man, give me some more numbers, man. It's 3-on-3 basketball. Open your eyes. I'll send you contact lenses and glasses if you need to. But don't do this to me. Don't you dare do this to me. Don't you absolutely ever do this to me. Talk about some darn points per possession in 3-on-3 basketball. You got to be out of your mind. You think that's going to be acceptable to me. You better take these cuts and these drives and these shots, and you better like it. I don't want to hear about effective field goal percentage in 3-on-3 basketball. You leave it alone.
Well, as it does not matter how I end the pod, apparently, Steve has indeed turned off his camera. Maybe we'll post this clip at some point. Shout out to our dear watch party pal, DZ, who also had a mailbag question. We're going to get to that later. DZ created a 4 factors Google Doc for Unrivaled that he just has live, which is very cool. Shout out to the Rose, having the best offensive rebound rate through the opening weekend of Unrivaled. You know what I mean? The Laces, the best opponent effective field goal percentage allowed. Defense really popped. You know what I mean? Turnover rate was low. Not as low as the Lunar Isles. It just didn't turn the ball over, etc. You know, we got some numbers. A 42.1 net rating for the Laces in the opening stretch of games here. But as Steve is probably like actually just out of the room at this point, thank you for listening to this episode of the Dunker Spot. If you haven't
was
already,
that
please
offensive rebound rate hit the horns.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the pod. As I said at the very top, Steve and I will be live on the NBA app, a strategy stream for Celtics Rockets on Monday night. So if you have League Pass and, you know, if you're a Celtics fan, you can listen to the Celtics crew if you want. If you're a Rockets fan, you can listen to the Rockets crew. But if you want to listen to us, you know, unbiased parties in this, you know what I mean? Come rock with us. Check out the strategy stream. We're going to be breaking the things down live. So check that out there. But you can subscribe to the pod on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcast. You can find us every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. You can catch us on YouTube, the Young Man and the Three YouTube channel, formerly the JJ Reddit YouTube channel. So if you want play spliced in, you get Steve live reactions. You could have actually saw him turn his camera off. If this happened on happened on the Tuesday episode, but we're there on YouTube every Tuesday. You can follow me on Blue Sky / Twitter at Nikias NBA. You can follow Steve at Steve Jones 20 on both. Join the Dunker Spot online watch parties. The link to the room is in the podcast description. It is free to create your profile, link your league pass, and we will be breaking things down live. And aside from basketball talk, we'll chop it up with wrestling. We take questions from the chat. We bounce around, listen to music. We talk. One of our younger members of the watch party about Redman, which was an interesting bit to say the least, but that's the kind of randomness you also get in the room. We let the hair down a little bit, so we have some fun.
The best way I can describe what occurred yesterday is we went to a breakdown on Redman to expose who that person was, which somehow flowed into more basketball, which flowed into a monster truck match featuring the unfortunate Red and Orange Man and the Giant. If that doesn't sell you on it, I don't know what to tell you.
It's a little bit of everything. So once again, the link is in the podcast description. It is free to create your profile. If you have a league pass, you can link your account. You can watch the games live alongside us.
Hey, speed it up, bud. Let's go.
Okay. Well, I guess this is the end. I got hit with the speed it up. We will catch y'all next week on YouTube. Rock with us on Monday. Y'all have a wonderful weekend.
I don't even have a closing line, man. The offensive rebound rate in 3-on-3. We're really doing this.